and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. One-on-one with Chicago Public School CEO Pedro Martinez on the district's latest accomplishments and challenges. Addressing an increase in animal euthanasia rates in Chicago.
This architectural marvel clocked in at a staggering 12 stories and 180 feet.
And looking at Chicago's lofty place in the history of the skyscraper. And now to some of today's top stories. If you haven't felt the heat already, you will. The National Weather Service is forecasting hot and humid conditions all week. Temperatures are expected to soar into the upper 90s with a daytime heat index topping 100. Lows will only be in the 70s and 80s. Now the good news. All of the Chicago Park District's pools, splash pads, and water playgrounds are open. Clearly the beach is too. For more on schedules, please visit our website. Candidates in the race for Chicago's elected school board began lining up today to file nominating petitions for the first time ever. Under the new state law, candidates for the first 10 seats on the Chicago Board of Education must file a statement of candidacy, 1,000 required signatures, notarized signatures of petition circulators, and a statement of economic interest. Chicago Board of Elections staff will not be checking the validity of those signatures. Filing runs today through Monday, June 24th. The last day to file objections to candidates is Monday, July 1st. Mayor Brandon Johnson is launching a task force to explore a reparations program for Black Chicagoans. Johnson says the commission will study policies that have harmed Black Chicagoans from the slavery era to present day and make remedy recommendations. $500,000 is earmarked in the city's budget to study the issue. The announcement comes as this week marks the third year since Juneteenth was proclaimed a federal holiday. Juneteenth honors the day in 1865 when enslaved Black people in Galveston, Texas, learned about their emancipation 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation was issued. Chicago Public Schools CEO is up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Chicago Public School students are making academic gains this year. District officials say CPS students overall saw a 5 percentage point increase in language arts and a 2 percentage point increase on their math scores compared to 2023. Meanwhile, the Chicago Teachers Union held its first ever public bargaining session with the district last Friday. It all comes amid some fiscal challenges, with the 2025 full district budget still waiting to be published. Here to talk about all of that and more is Chicago Public Schools CEO Pedro Martinez. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you, Brandis. Thank you for having me.
So let's start with the assessments. The latest state assessments show major progress in both English and math. Third through eighth graders saw a 5-point increase from last year with higher proficiencies than pre-pandemic times. What do you attribute all this to?
Well, first of all, I'm so proud, Brandis, of our staff and our students. And so, as you said, for the first time since the pandemic started, we're now at exceeding pre-pandemic levels in reading. And we know that reading is foundational for all of our students. You know, we are seeing some great investments that we've made, and we're seeing the results from it. We have intervention teachers at our schools with the highest poverty rates. We have seen our Black students, for example, had the biggest gains in our district with 6 points. And so these are schools that didn't have sufficient resources in the past. In addition, we also are seeing, results from our tutors that we have after-school programs across the district. And of course, like I said, just the hard work of our teachers and students.
That 6% for Black students, that is a large leap, 6%, which it indicates to me that they had some room to grow, that there was a lot of room to grow. So all of that said, 31% of students being proficient in ELA, English Language Arts, that still means that 69% are not proficient. What's the plan to continue the progress, this growth that you've seen?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think one of the things to note, Brandis, is that this year's gains build on last year's gains, which also saw a 6-point gain in reading and 2-point gain in math. And we know from a study from Harvard and Stanford that we were number one in the country in reading recovery. Number one in reading recovery for black students, number two for our Latino students in the country. So this builds on these gains. The other, you know, context I would give you is that, you know, our state proficiency rate, and other, they haven't released their recent results, but for 2023, they were at 35% in reading, and so 27% in math. So our state overall is also, doesn't have high ratings, but remember, we have a very rigorous assessment. More importantly, what I saw was students across every grade level growing. And so as we see this growth, we also, I also have to remind our community, our high schools right now couldn't be stronger. We're seeing record graduation rates, record scholarships, record number of college credits being earned. So as I tell our high school principals, imagine as these students move on through high school, we're going to see even stronger results.
Last week, the district announced that the CPS budget for the 2025 fiscal year would be released in July instead of last Wednesday, which was the original plan. Why the delay? What are we working on?
So we want to really firm up our budget. You know, one of the things that we said, Brian, is, and this is, again, to protect the gains that we're seeing, is that we wanted to protect the investments at our schools. You know, we work with our principals. We made some tough decisions. And so we're finding efficiencies and reductions in our central office. So we want to make sure that we firm those up. I will tell you that I feel confident that we're going to have a balanced budget for the July board meeting. We are going to be able to stave off the cuts from the schools. It does mean, though, that, you know, some challenges centrally, plus, you know, we're still going to have some more challenges in the coming year.
Now, some of those challenges are, of course, that $400 million budget deficit. Are there any specific measures that are being considered to address this deficit without compromising the quality of education for students?
So for us, you know, Brandon, the main thing we're looking at is, and I really am grateful to our partners, whether it's our vendors or other partners that we have, we've asked them to give us concessions and we've asked them to give us savings. We found efficiencies. We're doing a hiring freeze across the district as well. So we're making some tough decisions, but we're also trying to preserve our core services, because the challenge that I have right now is that we've made so many investments in our schools, and we just need a certain level of infrastructure to be able to maintain that. But what I love is that, you know, our team is really working together to make sure that our schools are protected, because, again, we're seeing the evidence in the student gains.
It feels like we've been here before with CPS, before your time, with, you know, a massive budget deficit. I remember it was about $1 billion, maybe 7 or 8 years ago. Then, of course, the state passed the evidence-based funding model with a ramp to fully fund that. We're not there yet, but that's supposed to happen over time. And, of course, the district received a lot more money during the COVID years. That money is starting to run out. Why are we here again?
Yeah, so, Brandon, so one of the things we did is we phased in the federal funding over 3 years. So year three is next year. We've had a structural deficit of $600 to $700 million a year. It's about half of that, like you said, $400 million for next year. And that's as we have the last tranche of federal funding that we're going to have. So that's why the deficit will be bigger in 2026. The main issue is that, and our state has done a great job in adding funding, but as I said publicly, our needs are outpacing the funding we're getting from the state. I have more students than ever that have IEPs that require special services. We have more migrant students than ever. In fact, our enrollment's actually up. We're almost at 329,000 students as we finished last year. That's up from 323 the year before. And so for us, we're seeing more students, more needs, and the funding just is not keeping up. And we also know that the state, even from their own funding formula, they're short about $1 billion with a B just for Chicago alone. Again, this is not a problem that our leaders in the state created. They inherited, but I really want to work with them because we are seeing the evidence of what could happen when we invest in our district.
You mentioned that 6,000 student growth this year over the year before. To what do you attribute that?
So two things we're seeing, Brandis. One is our enrollment is stabilizing. So we're seeing the least amount of students from every group leaving us. In the past, we're seeing large numbers of our black students and Latino students leaving us. We're not seeing that anymore. So we saw stabilization just in time for us to receive thousands of migrant students, many of them which can be very mobile, but they're also staying, you know, many are also staying in our city. So because of that, we're seeing that increase in enrollment.
And they also, as we know, they probably come with some additional needs with regards to language barriers, but also mental health needs and whatever medical and trauma they may have experienced. I want to shift a little bit to negotiations because, of course, the CTU contract with the district expires at the end of this month. Last week, you all, as we mentioned, you held your first ever public bargaining session. Here's a bit of that.
So we're going to bargain the common good of this contract on the front yard of Chicago with the very people who deserve to have the most voice, because these are the people who deal with the most impact of all of the decisions that we get to make. So we mean it when we say that we want partnership to transform. The only thing right now that I'm disappointed about is that I do not see the leadership of the Board of Education here, and I do not see the leadership of our school district here. This is not a game.
What's your reaction to, that's of course CTU President Stacey Davis Gates. What's your reaction to her comments?
Yeah, so actually, you know, by design and by agreement, Brandis, you know, we have a core negotiation team that actually is made up of my senior leaders. It has never been common for the CEO or members from the board to be part of negotiation events. Frankly, it creates a weird power struggle in many ways. So this is by design. Saying that, you know, I'm very proud of how my team performed on Friday. We presented our data. We listened to our CTU partners and just listening to their concerns. And frankly, what I found was just good conversations. We're trying to unpack some complexities that exist in our district. So I look forward to the future ones. But by design, we have a core team made up of senior leaders. And then I also have content experts that attend every one of the sessions based on the topic that's being discussed, Brandon. So I'm looking forward for this process to evolve.
CTU has been calling for open negotiations for some time. Why did the district agree to them this time?
You know, one of the things that I have to acknowledge, and I'm finishing my third school year, there's so many complexities in our school district, whether it's our budget, you know, the priorities that we have and why we're making the investments we're making. And one of the things that's always a challenge is, how do I explain that to families? We have a large multi-billion dollar budget. We have so many schools. We're so large. So my hope is that in this partnership, you know, you can hear both what the concerns are of CTU as well as what our response is. And also, you know, again, you know, what is it that we prioritize? I want to make sure our families know that things that are important to us, that we're going to, you know, try to protect, and we're hopefully, and things that we can also come to agreement with CTU.
Well, and to that point, what are the district's main priorities going into negotiating?
Yeah, so a few things, Brian. So one of the things, first of all, I am so proud that over time now, you know, we have one of the highest pay schedules for teachers in the country. We have one of the highest starting salaries. Our average teacher salary is over $100,000. I want to make sure we continue to invest in our staff and teachers. I've seen, you know, the benefits of, you know, we have less teacher turnover. We don't have the shortages that other districts have. So that's one example. Another is making sure we protect, you know, the supports for both our teachers and our students. We have academic coaches. We have intervention teachers and tutors. One of the things that we know is that that's making a difference based on our recent results. And then, of course, we want to continue to invest in enrichment, the fine arts, you know, sports programs. These are all priorities for us. So I am hoping that we can find common ground with our CTU partners, but these are just, you know, a few examples of the areas that we're seeing, as well as making sure that our children have just access to strong instruction and strong content.
Before we let you go, candidates today began filing for ballot positioning with the Board of the Chicago Board of Elections for the Chicago Board of Education. That election, of course, is in November. You have served with elected school boards in the past. We've got about 45 seconds. What can we expect to be different?
You know, it's been my history. You know, this is my third superintendency. So what I'm looking forward to is just meeting our new board members, you know, in January, finding advocates that will actually go and speak about our district and what's happening. In addition, it's a great way for us to just know what's going on the ground in the community. So, you know, again, I'm going to be optimistic that it's going to create a new sense of energy. And also, I look forward to the district, frankly, becoming more independent.
That board's also going to grow to 21 seats later on, which is a lot. Have you ever worked with a board that big before?
I have not, Brandis, but, you know, I'm willing to take on the challenge because I will always work with anybody who's going to advocate for our district.
Okay. CEO, school CEO Pedro Martinez, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Up next, what's being done to address a spike in pet euthanasia? Stay with us. Chicago is on track to surpass last year's record high euthanasia rates. The city shelter has seen a 24% increase in the first 5 months of 2024. That is according to city data, which also shows euthanasia rates have increased every year since 2021. Advocates say a rise of intake and lack of adoption is contributing to the issue. Joining us now with more is Heather Owen, executive director and co-founder of One Tail at a Time. We also invited Chicago Animal Care and Control and Paws Chicago, but they declined. Heather Owen, we welcome you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So remind us first, please, what kind of work your organization does.
So One Tail at a Time is a nonprofit. We take in dogs, cats, and critters that are from shelters or owner surrenders that need help getting rehomed. We also help people keep their pets through a variety of community support programs.
Do you center them or have a center where you keep them, or mostly working with foster volunteers?
So most of our animals are in foster homes. We have almost 400 animals right now, but we also have a dog adoption center in Bucktown where we'd love people to come in and adopt a dog.
Okay. So what have you all seen then as the cause of more pet owners having to surrender their animals?
It's a variety of things. So this isn't a simple problem with a simple solution. So we have to look at a lot of things. But what we've seen lately in the past couple of years is we've seen a decline in adoptions, which we're trying to figure out what's going on. We know that people are still acquiring pets. And some data that we saw recently showed us that people, about a third of the people that are going to get dogs this year are probably going to get them from breeders, pet stores, backyard breeders, places like that. So we're hoping those people would come to the shelters, because if we got a portion of them to come to the shelters, we can stop this problem.
Is assistance available for people who have to surrender their pets? Is it? And we don't know, it sounds like we don't necessarily know why they're surrendering it, if it's economic or a shift in attitudes about having pets.
Yeah, I think it's a variety of things. We do keep data, and one of the top things that we see is it's housing problems. So, you know, this is an intersectional issue, and so if we address things like having affordable, safe housing that people can go that does not discriminate against pets, then we would see a big decline in people surrendering their pets. We also see a lot of people come to animal control who need help caring for them, whether it be veterinary bills or needing help with food. We're really lucky in Chicago. We have a lot of groups that are out there helping people keep their pets. So there's assistance for people that want it, and people should reach out if they want it. But otherwise, I think we're seeing a variety of hardships, economic issues, housing issues, and that's why people are surrendering.
Historically, the summer months have seen a higher rate of those kinds of intake as well. What are you all expecting to see this year?
So we are very nervous about the July 4th holiday. We always see an uptick in stray animals. So we really hope that people will microchip their pets, put a tag on them, keep them inside, because fireworks can be very scary. But also, if there's anything we can do to help you keep your pet, July in general is a really hard time for them to be at the shelter. It's not a safe place for them to be. So if people can find an alternative, that's what we recommend.
Is there anything that you can do? Is there anything that you do to prepare for that rise in intakes, particularly, like you said, around the 4th of July?
Yeah, we're trying to do as many adoptions as we can right now to make room so that the nonprofits that are helping CACC can take in more animals and save more. So if you can foster, if you can volunteer, if you can donate, if you can adopt, you'll help us get prepared for that for sure.
How does all of this impact the decision that is made when a shelter has to euthanize a pet?
Yeah, we haven't seen anything like this in a very long time. And I think Chicago Animal Care and Control specifically, I've been helping them for 16 years, and I don't remember when it's been this bad. And it's interesting because intake is actually a bit lower than it was pre-pandemic. And we're not at the 2019 levels yet, but the percentage of animals being euthanized is higher. So that's what we're looking at. So we're wondering, why aren't there more outcomes? And one of the things that we really have to ask is, why are there open positions at Chicago Animal Care and Control? Why don't they have the resources that they need to be able to serve the public? And so we'd love for the city and the mayor's office to take a look at some of the open appointed positions, like the executive director and deputy director, see if we can get people in there to help. So we don't have to make these decisions, because it's very hard to decide who we euthanize.
Do you get the sense that the city is prioritizing this issue?
No, but like I said, it's intersectional. So anything they do with fair housing or helping the economy is going to help the issue. But I think that advocates right now, we're not asking for anything more. We know that money is tight. We know we're not going to get a bigger budget. But what we would like is for the budget that we have to be fulfilled. So if we can get those people in the job, in the leadership positions that can help Chicago Animal Care and Control do what they do, no one there wants to euthanize animals. I think that's very clear. Everyone that works there wants to do the best thing for the animals, but they don't have the support that they need to do it.
How do you encourage adoption?
We try to make it as easy as possible. And I think, you know, that's our part. Everyone has to do their part. So rescues, shelters should make it as easy as possible. So if you come to One Tail at a Time, it is so easy. You can look at the animal same day. You can go home with an animal that day. We'll match you up with a dog or a cat or a critter that's right for your family. You can foster to adopt. There's lots of ways you can get involved and find the right pet for you.
You mentioned, you know, sort of some folks going to a breeder, for example, versus coming to someone like you or an organization like yours. Are prospective pet owners, are they still choosing to maybe buy a puppy rather than adopting a dog that's an adult?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. And it's interesting to me because there are economic concerns and breeders are so much more expensive. If you come to us, it's cheaper. They're spayed and neutered. They're vaccinated. They're healthy. You know what you're getting. Like, you're ready to go. If you go to animal control, it's $65 to adopt a dog. Like, that's a great deal. It's a steal. So I think, you know, people sometimes think that if they get a puppy or if they go somewhere, they know, you know, what they're getting. But the reality is adult dogs, you know exactly who you're getting. So, and you don't have to worry about housebreaking or things like that. So I very much encourage people to look at adult dogs, but we also have puppies available for adoption, and they're staying longer than they ever have before, and that makes us nervous.
Are people ever sort of concerned that, okay, this dog is an adult, but does it come with some trauma because it was a stray or abused or might have a heart issue or some illness that has developed?
Yeah, and I mean, I think it would be naive to say that there's no animals that come in with those things, but the overwhelming majority of animals that we see were loved pets, and someone just needed to rehome them for whatever reason, so most of them are going to make great family pets or companions for pretty much anyone.
How do you educate first-time pet adopters before they adopt?
I mean, I think the nice thing about going to rescue or shelter is you're going to get tons of support. So at One Tail at a Time, we have trainers on staff and people that can walk you through pretty much anything. We are there for you for the life of your pet.
Okay. Heather Owen at One Tail at a Time, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Up next, we explore Chicago's skyscraper history. But first, a look at the weather. A Chicago eyesore is being fixed one shovel at a time. Developers today began filling in the giant hole left behind from the failed Chicago Spire project. The Spire was supposed to become the world's tallest building, but money problems stalled its construction in 2008, leaving behind a big hole for more than 15 years. Now, two towers are set to be built on the site, including a residential building currently under construction. It'll be 72 stories and is expected to be finished in early 2027. All this got us thinking about Chicago's preeminent place in the history of the skyscraper. Nick Blumberg has the story in our latest edition of WTTW News Explains.
Chicago is a city of firsts. Everything from the first Ferris wheel to the first brownie and the world's very first skyscraper. In 1885, the Home Insurance Building went up on the corner of Adams and LaSalle. This architectural marvel clocked in at a staggering 12 stories and 180 feet.
Oh.
Okay, maybe not a skyscraper by modern standards, but for its time, it was an impressive feat, supported by a steel frame reinforced with concrete. As the years ticked by, the city of big shoulders became a city of big buildings. Builders got more ambitious, and the heights just kept on getting higher. The Wrigley Building, Tribune Tower, Carbide & Carbon. Less than 50 years after the Home Insurance Building, and more than three times as tall, the iconic Chicago Board of Trade Building rises and reigns as the city's tallest for more than three decades. Later on, the Standard Oil Building, now known as the Aon Center, held the title for a year before being beaten out in 1974 by the massive Sears Tower. At more than 1,400 feet, it became the tallest building not just in Chicago, but the world. The Windy City skyline has changed a lot over the years. Aon's now only the city's fourth tallest, still followed by the building it dethroned in 1973, the John Hancock Center, now called 875 North Michigan Avenue. The St. Regis, completed in 2020, is the city's third tallest. And Trump Tower, completed in 2009, sits in the number two spot. The Willis Tower, as we now begrudgingly call it, still holds the title of tallest in Chicago, but was long ago knocked off its perch as the tallest in the U.S. and the world. According to the Council on Tall Buildings and Urban Habitat, New York's One World Trade Center is now tops in the country. Dear Old Willis is third tallest in the U.S. and 23rd worldwide. But even though we lost that top spot, Chicago's place in the history of the skyscraper still towers above everyone else.
Chicago still tops, though. You can see this and other episodes of our Emmy Award-winning series, WTTW News Explains, on our website. Of course, that's WTTW.com/explains. And that's our show for this Monday night. Don't forget to stay connected with us by signing up for our daily briefing. And you can also get Chicago Tonight streamed on Facebook, YouTube, and our website, WTTW.com/news. You can also get the show via podcast and the PBS video app. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Candidates for Chicago's elected school board began filing paperwork. Our Spotlight Politics team on that and more. Plus, a photographer who spent years documenting the reality of life along the famed Route 66. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, which is proud to honor founder and senior partner Robert Clifford, who has been named in Forbes 2024 list of America's top 200 lawyers.